button so okay. we can just start talking. So
there you go.
Everybody ready?
Excellent.
Yep. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, hands in the circle. Go team. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast again. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and I am just doing this until my rap metal career takes off. Today we have a roundtable talking about various things, comics, and related to Supers RPG. First off, Mr. Steve Kenson is here today. Welcome, Steve.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Also from Green Ronin, and I guess Pinnacle these days, we have Mr. Chris McLaughlin.
Hello.
Hey, Chris. Glad to have you here.
Oh, great to be here as always. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And rounding out our Algonquin roundtable, we have Mr. D.T. Puccino.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Thanks for having me. Right. Oh, glad you're here. D.T. does the AOV line of characters from Zion for Mutants and Masterminds. And Mr. Aid Smith, who is our frequent co-host, is here as well.
Hello there.
Hey, glad to have you. So hey guys, we wanted to open up today, do some talks about comics and talk about gaming, and we were going to open up by talking about event comics, which ones we love and hate, but you know, right before we started recording, Chris was talking some interesting stuff about this project he's doing for Pinnacle, and while his griddle is still warm, I'd like to continue on that thread. So Chris, what are you doing for Pinnacle these days?
Well, I got a surprise lunch invitation from the guy who broke me into the industry, the awesome and justifiably famous Shane Hensley, and he did his usual smooth pitch. He bought me a cheeseburger, so I said yes, and then he told me what the project was. No, I'm kidding. It was actually backwards. I got the cheeseburger first because I know how to negotiate. But yes, the bottom line is, they said, so Necessary Evil 2? And, I got my cheeseburger and I said, sure, okay, I'm in. And so, yeah, for future reference, my price is reasonable, cheeseburger. And Clint Black was there too. Clint is who is also awesome, and we bounced around some ideas, and their idea was to do another story set in that world, mm-hmm. and we are sort of going to be the smaller scale, lower powered, uglier, grungier, nastier, dirtier, but still wonderfully, diabolically, hilariously evil that, you love about the original Necessary Evil.
So you guys are like the Tea Party compared to the Republican Party, right?
That was
so inappropriate. I'm sorry, Chris. Just go ahead. That was bad. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't know. I sort of hope that we sort of have some bare level of competency. I might be one distinction one could draw.
Well, hey, and to segue away from my bad political joke, in case we have any readers out there who are unfortunate enough to not know what Necessary Evil is, could you give them a quick elevator speech on that?
It's the greatest high concept for an RPG product, or maybe even really any fictional world that I've ever come up with. And it's basically, you take your typical comic book superhero world, have it invaded by aliens, but this time the aliens win and kill all the superheroes. And the only thing that stands between them and complete domination and ruination of the planet are the supervillains. So it's a game where you start out playing a supervillain, and you have extra incentive to be nasty, cruel, evil, terrible, and violent, but you're sort of accidentally doing it for a good reason.
That is pretty cool. And so that was covered by the first Necessary Evil.
By the wonderful Clint Black, yes.
Where are you guys going with Necessary Evil 2?
Well, the basic idea is Clint's. I have to give full course of credit. But his idea was... is there any way that we could do something else with this world, focus on the more lower power characters, and have a way for it to be even more bloody, violent, and nasty? So they've come up with a situation where I think we're going to do just that. I have napkins and notebooks and stuff covered with notes in it, and they all grow all the more terrible every time I pick up a pen. But it was just, I think the best analogy I could give you is the first one was about being a bad person who's doing the right thing for the right reasons. The second one is going to be about being a bad person where you, hello?
Yep. Jason Tyner just joined us. Jason, oh, okay. We're already in progress, and Chris is talking about Necessary Evil 2.
Chris, please carry on. I love hearing you talk.
Oh, thank you. The second one is about being a bad person, but you have to be a worse person just to stay alive. It's like putting a bunch of scorpions in a bottle and watching them sting each other. So it's wonderfully terrible as far as the things that you do.
Or terribly wonderful.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. So.
And this is for the Savage Worlds, the Fun, Fast, and Furious RPG system.
Yes.
And
yes, indeed.
When can we pick up this bad boy?
Well, I am supposed to have it in early next year, and then it will go into Pinnacle's capable hands, and I would imagine that you would probably see it no later than the end of 2014, and probably a lot sooner. Because if necessary, I will start laying out pages myself. I'll draw the darn thing. That's how excited I am about people seeing this.
How well can you draw, Chris?
Oh my! Well, I whenever I have to draw a map on my chalkboard in my classes, I joke with my kids that I'm glad I live in a state that's basically two triangles, or I'd be completely at sea. Because if I move, I've pretty much got to head for like Wyoming or Colorado or
the square states.
Yeah, you know, I go to Maryland, I'm doomed. I've had it.
Well, in general, that can be true though too. I mean,
yeah, yes.
I just finished watching The Wire, and it's intense there in Maryland, let me tell you. But, Mike's going to stop making jokes and segue into talking about RPGs right now. Steve, Emerald City just came out.
The latest thing for Mutants and Masterminds is our Emerald City set, which is still in pre-order right now. So folks can pre-order the print edition of the set, which comes three books in a handsome slipcase with a really kick-ass cover painting of Emerald City. They can get the PDF versions of the books as a $5 add-on with the pre-order. So it comes basically with a player's guide to the setting, Game Master Secrets book, and the Emerald City Knights Adventure Series collected as a single big 112-page book, which is pretty much a whole mini campaign for you to run set in Emerald City.
So, that's all kinds of value just for picking up the Emerald City PDF there.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll get a quick look at it, you know, right up front by just getting the PDFs, and then you can get the print, you know, pre-order and get the print edition as soon as it's, you know, shipping out to the distributors. Hmm. And in addition to Emerald City, we've got the print edition of the Power Profiles book, which is the collection of the PDF series that we did last year as a whole collection of different superpowers, different power sources or different power themes, and a lot of worked examples about how you could build all of those different powers in Mutants and Masterminds. Plus, the print version of the book has a bunch of additional essays on how to handle problem powers, how to create certain types of powers, how to handle things like what we call the power level X, or, you know, essentially unlimited power characters and themes in the game, and a bunch of design notes as well. So there's a lot of added value in the book. Plus, it has a really beautiful cover painting to it. So
cool. And that's
we couldn't stop touching the cover at Gen Con when we pulled those out of the box,
right?
Because, you know, it's laid out on a new kind of stock, and it's like slick and neat and addictive. So I mean, you'll never open it up, but it's the best book you'll ever buy.
Now that's the that cover that's got kind of the heroes from Emerald City and the heroes from Freedom City, sort of in a mashup.
Yes, yeah, it's got it's what we, you know, kind of call our team up cover.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome. Okay, cool. And those are both available either for pre-order or you can buy it in dead form.
Power Profile should be out in stores now. Emerald City is still in pre-order, but probably not for much longer. So if folks want to get in on the pre-order deal, they should check it out, greenrunning.com, pretty soon.
Yeah, and I'll have the links for both of those in the show notes. So cool. Well, hey, while we're talking about products, just a quick waving the ego flag. Both Chris and I have stuff in Emerald City.
Yes. Cool stuff, too.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
I got to ride the strip club, because apparently you guys know what that is.
Well, they say right with you now.
I'm more appropriate to imagine, yes.
Okay, hey DT, since we're doing the rounds talking about RPG stuff, tell us what you got coming out for the AOV line.
Well, we just passed our 1 year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. We're actually working on some solos for this month. We've got a new line that's coming out of it that's called Gangs. that's going to originally the first issue is going to feature a game called the Red Caps. December, we're going to be doing some holiday issues, and hopefully, either by December or January, we'll actually have our first collection out, which will collect the first 6 months of the PDFs.
Mm. Excellent. Will that be in PDF or POD or both? Or
it's going to be both PDF and POD.
Okay, excellent, excellent. I will throw up a link for your latest guy who looks like Bloodletter.
Cool.
No, yeah, actually, you had one more recent than Bloodletter, didn't you?
Yeah, I just brought out a Headshot.
Okay, yeah. Cool, then I'll link to him. Go ahead. Sorry, Jason, go ahead.
Can you tell me about the system that you're talking about? I'm hearing you talking about these books, but I don't recognize them. Can you tell me what they are? What am I missing?
The Acts of Villainy books are basically little villain PDFs for Mutants Masterminds.
Okay, all right, good. Thank you.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. Actually, I had a cameo in not to flag my ego again, but I was an evil scientist in a recent issue of AOV. So, yeah, cool. Well, hey, so the big roundtable subject today was event comics. Love them, hate them, etc. And who wants to go first? Aid, you've been awfully quiet so far. What about you?
Me?
Yes, you.
Nine.
You lad, you.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well. I know this was something we were going to discuss a couple of weeks ago. I have a massive, massive problem with unnecessary event comics and Marvel's kind of constant hey, we've just finished one event, but don't forget tomorrow, there's another event coming along right away, which is bugging the hell out of me at the moment. So that was kind of the inspiration for this kind of thing. As for favourites and ones I haven't enjoyed, favourite probably has to be going back to Secret Wars back in the old days, because it was pretty much the first Marvel crossover thing I'd ever read. In the UK, we got like weeklies that had 11 pages of the actual Secret Wars and then some backups as well, so they kind of eked out that way. So I only ever read the first four or five issues before it kind of just disappeared. I hadn't actually read the entire 12 issue series until the omnibus came out a long ago. So, but it's still excellent. Still love it. And I remember there was a Secret Wars 2, which basically the UK version of Secret Wars 2 had, they reprinted every single issue that was involved in that crossover. So one week you'd have Fantastic Four, next week you'd have the core book, next week you'd have the other stuff like that. But there was one issue that had a fold-out that had like a collection of all the heroes of the Marvel Universe. And I remember studying that cover. It's kind of like, okay, I know that guy, and just trying to figure out who I knew and that kind of thing. That was something I definitely remember so much. But yeah. Probably my favourite out of the lot, possibly closely followed by Annihilation, the original one. That was excellent as well.
Annihilation was pretty good.
I loved Annihilation. I loved the cosmic stuff. I'm very disappointed that the cosmic stuff has kind of slowly gone away from that now. I've just been reading Infinity and it's not been too bad, but it's got Thanos in it, and I love Thanos, like I mentioned in the last podcast, my three favourite guys, Thanos, Ultron and Galactus. All in the crossovers, but they've still not quite got that way. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, I'll be interested to see if they bring back Richard Rider. They brought back Star-Lord. They were both supposed to die in the Cancerverse.
I believe there is rumors he will be coming back.
Yeah. No, Secret Wars was my introduction to actually superhero comics in general way back in the day. It's kind of interesting to look at it now and look how some of those characters have changed, like Rogue. Mm. And heck, Spider-Man took out the entire X-Men in like three pages.
Yep. Yeah.
That was a great fight.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, Jason, you just joined and you haven't said too much. What's your most loved or most hated event comic?
I'm going to put in a plug for the cross-company crossovers, right? Mm-hmm. Like the last one was JLA Avengers.
That was a good one, yeah.
And
that
was awesome. I was a sucker for those books. I remember sitting in the aisle of the local drugstore when I was about 9 years old and reading Batman versus the Hulk.
Yep.
And they're just so much fun, and I loved them. And I thought that JLA Avengers gave us an opportunity to have, like, the second issue was kind of everybody's dream. It was like, what if we take both of these? Well, the second issue, I think, was the big fight issue with the two teams. Mm-hmm. That
was the who'd win issue, yeah.
And then the third issue is where we smash them together, and we have, like, everyone's dream universe where all the Marvel and DC characters existed the same in the same universe.
Yeah. Well, the one page where Busiek did his riff on the annual JLA-JSA crossover, except it was the JLA and the Avengers.
Yeah.
And he made up like four or five historical, quote-unquote historical ones that never happened.
Yeah.
Just like pure nerd crack.
Yeah. and I have like the big giant expanded edition version, you know, like the big hardback that we put in next to large pages. And there's a companion book to that that's just like all kinds of George Perez just noodling around and all these characters and all the pages of the old JLA Avengers crossover that he started and never got to finish back in the 70s. And I just love going through that book and doing exactly what Abe was just talking about, which is recognizing all of those obscure characters. Oh, wait, that's, you know, that's Prometheus back there and you know, and Taskmaster and all those guys, you know, and going through those pages. And I love that. I love that stuff. Those crossover companies crossover. That's what I'm going to stick by.
You know, if you compare that to the whole DC versus Marvel stuff, came out a few years before.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of like night and day.
Yeah.
You know that those books. It's interesting because those had that whole popularity contest angle going. If you remember, where people were asked to vote on who would win.
And somehow Wolverine finds a way to take out Lobo. Yeah.
Wolverine kills everybody. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, and so then the writers got stuck with trying to make those stories happen, even when they didn't want to write that story.
Mm-hmm.
So we get the story where Peter David is writing an issue of Superman versus the Hulk. And so, of course, the Hulk wins because it's Peter David writing it, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was those were odd stories. On the other hand, if we're gonna the amalgam issues were actually kind of neat.
Yep.
You remember those? Yeah. And
yeah, actually, that was my pick.
Well, we're all shut up and let you talk.
So, well, yeah, I was just gonna say as you know crossovers go, my favorite crossover event was the amalgam books, because it was just this really crazy, fun, wacky mashup of, you know, the DC and the Marvel universes and, you know, put them both in a blender and,
right.
You know, see what you come up with. And, you know, there was some really fun, you know, there were a lot of the amalgam books where I would be like, I read this like as a regular series. I really wish that, you know, they would keep some of these going. You know, they were cool. It was a lot of fun. It was very creative and it had a lot of energy, to it. And plus, you know, because the amalgam books were their own little self-contained universe, they didn't do the one thing that I really hate about crossover books, which is they didn't break into the regular continuity of an ongoing book and say, well, you know, we know you've been building up, a plot line for the last 8 issues, but we're going to completely stop that for the next 3 so that we can do these pointless crossover issues that we don't want to do. And then we're going to get back to our regular storyline at some point.
Yeah, I remember in the Teen Titans X-Men crossover back in the day, and there's this panel where, like, Cyborg is swinging through New York City thinking, hey, the X-Men live in New York. I wonder why we've never fought them. Right? Well, why do you think? Anyway, so yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Sometimes it's better when they're just in their own little self-contained universe. You don't have to have these logical questions.
So, Steve, did you have a favorite amalgam character?
Oh, gosh. I liked a lot of the amalgam characters, but I think my favorite one was Kurt Busiek's Iron Lantern.
Iron Lantern,
that was a good one.
Because he got to mash up, you know, Silver Age Tony Stark and Silver Age Hal Jordan, and you know it was just such a great combo, and you know how he got to do Madame Sapphire as a Madame Mask Star Sapphire combo. It was just great. You know, it was all this stuff that I was just like, wow, that just works really well.
Some of those characters are a little bit too on, like Doctor Strange Fate.
But Iron a little too on the nose, but you know. On the other hand, the Spider Boy comic that did Spider Man and Superboy was a super great mashup story. And you know, he had what was it, Bizarnage.
Especially the first one of those. The first one of those was really great. The second one was a little strange when they tried to bring the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah.
I liked Super Soldier. The Captain
Super Soldier was good.
Superman riff, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, most of them were pretty good. I mean, I thought the Amazon one that did a Storm Wonder Woman mashup was really good.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to like Bruce Wayne Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I remember being a little let down by it.
Mm.
Wasn't there a Batman Wolverine mashup? Or am I remembering correctly?
There was Dark Claw.
How was that? I can't recall it.
That was okay.
Yeah. I vaguely remember they had mashed up, who was it, the Joker and
Sabretooth.
Sabretooth, yeah.
I believe it was called the Jackal, wasn't he?
Yeah,
the
something like that.
Okay.
Hyena.
That makes sense. Hyena. The hyena, yeah, that was it.
Yep. Well, hey, DT, you've been kind of quiet there in the background. How do you want to weigh in on this?
Of my favorites, you know, I've got to actually agree with Aid about the Secret Wars. I love the Secret Wars. I remember going out and buying the module for the old Marvel Super Heroes game.
Oh, yeah.
I remember running the heck out of that thing. So, of recent stuff though, I got to tell you, I really like Infinity. I've been really enjoying it. It's been a really fun ride.
Really?
You're the first like crossover, or just the core books?
I mainly read the core books and the main Avengers issues. I really like what Hickman's doing with it.
Because I'm only reading the core books, and I just found it. I just read it. It's like, oh, they've attacked Earth, and there's like one picture of one guy stabbing Wolverine. They go, oh, well, Earth's fallen now. Wolverine's dead. I think, okay, so is that the only person defending Earth? But you know, maybe in the satellite books, there's more happening on the Earth front. But just reading it as a core book thing, it's okay. It's got Thanos in it, for Christ's sake. I mean, I can't really argue that. So.
There has been a lot more going on in the satellite books. Like, Mighty Avengers crosses into it, and there's just so many books that cross into it. That's one of the things I liked about the Secret Wars back in the day, because there weren't really any crossovers, per se.
Right.
Exactly. That's what I want. Right. I want a book I can pick up and say, okay, six issues, boom, done. Okay, like, I mean, Forever Evil is pretty good at the moment, but, yeah, again, it crosses over into lots of other books, but the Batman book and the Superman book have actually had the origins of the new CSA Ultraman and Owlman in it, rather than kind of a story that actually ties into Forever Evil. So you could still kind of not read those and not miss anything out on the actual main story. But yeah, it's those. Oh, it's a 6-issue miniseries with 75,000 crossover books that come with it. And you have to buy everything to read. Oh yeah, Cyclops is over there because in that book you probably never read before. That's why. It just drives me nuts. Yeah, sorry, I just interrupt again.
Unfortunately, that's the way that comics are done these days. It's really too bad because the old Secret Wars. I mean, the only crossover you really had was, oh, there's something in the park, and then they vanished.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I find myself more on reading books that don't have any kind of crossovers. Like, I'm reading DC comics these days, so I'm just reading, like, Batman 66 and Little Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's never a story that goes longer than two issues, and it's usually done in one.
Yeah.
Although Batman 66 is kind of, it's just pure nostalgia, because often it feels like the old TV show. So.
Yeah, well, it's better. If it doesn't feel like the old TV show, then it's doing something wrong, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I heard they're going to be... Gonna be doing a Knight Rider comic with the same basic idea.
Yep, Knight Rider.
Yes, they are. Yes,
and Saved by the Bell.
Bell too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Saved by the Bell, man. How cool is that?
I like the idea because there's some old shows I'd like to see come back. I might have picked different shows myself, but
like what?
If DC doesn't do a Wonder Woman comic in that style, then are just missing the boat.
I think Steve just picked the best one. If I were going to say other things,
but I don't know. Wonder Woman's hard and complicated, so you know.
I can't tell if you're being facetious or not, Steve.
I think he's quoting Joss Whedon, or no, not Joss. Yeah, Joss Whedon, right?
Was it? I don't think it was Whedon who said it, but. You know, it's DC's explanation for why, you know, there isn't a Wonder Woman movie, because apparently Wonder Woman is complex.
Isn't it easy under DC's current paradigm? You get the absolute worst person in the world to play her, and then just have her kill thousands of people and completely ignore that, and then have her brutally murder the villain at the end and make it as depressing and unfun as possible.
Well, the funny thing is, of any of DC's major heroes, you know, for somebody who is likely to, you know, commit some you know, mayhem. At least Wonder Woman has that warrior ethos. I mean, I think that would be terrible writing, but
I'm so glad Chris is here. It makes me laugh.
Well, all I can say is the guy who gave us Sucker Punch is now the guardian of DC cinematic characters. I like Wonder Woman's chances.
Okay, it'll be funny. I have a Sucker Punch wallpaper on my computer right now.
You know, visually, there's some interesting stuff in that movie. If I could cut out like 2/3 of it and just focus on the fight scenes and then put it to like an Anthrax song,
then you basically have Man of Steel.
Yeah, but well, you know, there was a rumor back in the day that somebody had got a print of Phantom Menace and had cut down like an hour of it.
Yeah, it's called the Phantom Edit.
Yeah. So I like to think somewhere there's this rogue guerrilla projectionist who's saving movies from their directors. And I'm making the good parts versions. But, well, hey, Chris, since you raised your head with some of your usual invective, what you thought
thank you.
This event book thing?
Oh, well, I did a best and a worst. So do you want one or the other? Do you want one first?
You know you want to save the worst for last.
Why don't we do both and do the best first and then do the one that
okay.
you don't hate?
All right, best was easy. Blackest Night.
Good choice.
That was good.
Yeah, I mean, Geoff Johns at his best is when he's adding something of quality to the DC mythos, and honestly, for me, like the really really good Geoff Johns is where you read a story and he comes up with something and it immediately feels like it's been there since you know John Broom and Julie Schwartz, and this idea of having other colored lanterns, that's the most staggeringly brilliant thing I've seen in years. Personal bias, but that's just my thing.
No, it's great, and it expands the universe. You're absolutely
yes.
right.
Yeah.
Blackest Night is one of those books that is far, far better than it deserves to be in many ways. Because on the face of it, it sounds like a remarkably stupid idea.
Yeah, it's great. It's also blue and cool. Yeah, hey!
It's like, hey, the DC Universe is going to fight zombies. But it turns out it's actually kind of awesome.
Yeah, and the way that it ties so many things together, you know, like the fact that all of DC's top characters had been dead at one point prior to that, have a callback to that, bringing back Necron from God, the Lantern special in the 80s.
I love that series.
You know, making the Black Hand into a creepy, effective villain. I mean, I statted Black Hand for the old DC game. I thought I was the only person on Earth who even remembered he existed. So that's playing to me. And the thing about it is, it was such a great it had something that I think a lot. Not only was it a great story, well told, which obviously should be the main criteria that we have for this. Mm-hmm. You could just buy the 7 or 8 issues of the main storyline and not miss a thing.
Yeah.
It crossed over into all their other titles, and they were good little stories that didn't really disrupt what was going on in the regular comics. But the thing is, you could have skipped every one of them and not missed a thing.
Yep.
I mean, how many other crossovers are not just blatantly trying to screw you out of every last dollar? But this was an exception, and I appreciated that.
Minor trivia point, the very first Flash issue I ever bought was actually Black Hand was the villain.
I remember that one.
The Flash Green Lantern team up, I think, where Black Hand has to steal Flash's frictionless aura in order to enhance his powers in some completely inexplicable way.
Well, I mean, it's DC and DC and like the Bronze Age inexplicably is kind of there, whether you say it or not.
All right, so you're worst, Chris.
Okay, what's the opposite of wealth? But there was a lot of bad ones to choose from. I mean, ones that are just blatantly there to screw you out of your dollars. You know, certainly Identity Crisis would be in the running if you believe the Valerie DeRazzo stories about, you know, Dan Didio dancing around the office yelling, "The rape pages are here, the rape pages are here." You know, but I mean, that's technically her word against his. So I don't know if I can fairly use that against that series or not. But the one that I think just easily just sucks from start to finish, Genesis.
Mm.
Genesis, I mean, the speed with which it was forgotten, I think, may be the great testament to it.
Yeah. This is the one problem with John Byrne.
Yes, yep. Yes. It's like it's like a perfect storm of crap.
I don't even know what that is.
I just had to Google it. Genesis was a comic crossover storyline, straight from Wikipedia, folks, that ran through the self-titled four-issue weekly miniseries published DC Comics 1997. I was reading DC then. And I remember this
yep. series very well, actually. I was
synced without a ripple.
So it didn't strike me as being as awful. Now, I haven't read it since then, but I remember that it had Captain Marvel in it, and I kind of liked him. And it was also the series in which Wonder Woman was reintroduced to the DC universe because she'd been kind of off on her in her own book for about a year.
Let's see, this was back when Superman was blue and had electrical powers.
No, he was not blue.
No.
I'm looking at the cover of Genesis right now, and he's blue.
All right. Jason, I think you're thinking of Legends.
Oh, I am. You're right. Yes. I'm thinking of Legends. Yes. Okay, that's why. I didn't remember.
That was
okay.
Good.
Well,
Legends was good. I was just going to say that the problem with Genesis is calling it bad is almost giving it too much credit.
Well, let me explain.
It's forgettable.
Well, let me explain to you why I think it's the worst. As I said, it's a perfect storm of crap. It's like every bad thing about every crossover put together. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could tell the basic genesis of Genesis, if you will, was they were sitting around the office, what are we going to do for our crossover this year? I don't know. And that, you know, it just seemed to not get any better from that. It's just so obligatory. Mm-hmm. Secondly, completely forgettable. Thirdly, based off the New Gods, and as we've established on this show before, Jack Kirby, the writer, or Jack Kirby, the artist, brilliant, best ever. Jack Kirby, the writer, hey, folks, it's called Supertown. You know, it's part of this continuing pretense that the New Gods aren't stupid and terrible for the most part. And thirdly, just the way that they were having to bend the existing storylines to this. The one I remember the best, relatively speaking, was the Starman crossover. And they had to come up with some kind of bullcrap about how Starman is fueled by the Source Wall. And that loud noise you hear is the plot breaking, you know, being stretched well past, you know, state code guidelines.
Okay, that's weird. I've read that. I've got the Starman omnibuses, and I must have read the issue, but I have no idea it ties into Genesis. That's even stranger.
Well, as much as anything tied into Genesis.
Right.
You know, and, you know, the Green Lantern one was terrible. There was just some throw-off story about how all of a sudden Kyle Rayner's ring doesn't work. You know, I remember back in the 60s when they at least, you know, had like invisible yellow force fields, at least something pleasantly weird to do the same story. But here it was just so forced and so terrible. And, you know, I mean, and let's face it, you know, Geoff Johns has had a callback to everything in the DC universe, including Vibe. And even he's never mentioned Genesis again.
Well, now, I'm only going to take issue. I have to say, I'm going to stand up for the Fourth World. And it's not because I have some kind of obsessive worship of Jack Kirby. When I was young, I didn't even get Jack Kirby. But I wrote a whole book, a whole chapter of my dissertation on the Fourth World. So I got to stick up for that. I have time hours invested in that sucker.
Well, I appreciate its intentions way more than its execution. I mean, I appreciate that Jack wanted to do something adult and grown up and new and different. But, you know, when, you know, you finally get your freedom from that tyrant, funky flashman, Stan Lee, and, you know, your statement of independence is apocalypse, only with a K. Get it? Nudge, nudge, nudge. You know, maybe you should call Stan and see if there's still some work left over there.
Well, your main criticism and appears to be that he is not subtle. And I certainly am not going to argue with that.
I don't think anyone ever accused Kirby of being subtle.
But whatever faults you want to have, if your problem with him is that he is not subtle, you are dead on. However, I have those books in the – they publish like collected hardback editions of the whole New Gods Fourth World series. And I could read those books with Big Barda and Ryan and Mr. Miracle, I could read those books forever. Now, They aren't all great, and I will certainly give you that some of them fall completely flat, and others are just dumb. But there are some real gems in there, and some of the stuff he's trying to say I really got into, and a lot of the dialogue, like, you know, Darkseid's dialogue and stuff in there, I find it kind of horrifying poetry, like in a kind of good horrifying way, not bad horrifying way. But I just have to say, I'm not saying that Genesis didn't suck, because I don't remember a bloody thing about it. But I got to stand up for football.
Well, you know, to me, the thing about those characters is what moments I've liked them. They've been done by people other than Kirby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Darkseid when he pops up in the Legion during the Giffen run. Yeah. Okay, that's how you write that character. Or the classic moment where where he's fighting Superman and Superman comes back with burn. Yeah.
Was Darkseid. That was Mongol.
Darkseid. Mongol. Oh. Wow,
that was dark side colored in yellow.
Oh, forgive me, I'm having to confuse him with other characters to make him cool. So there we go. Maybe I should just stop.
Well, actually, they did a version of that somewhat in the Justice League animated where Superman and Darkseid were having it out.
Just about to mention that is my favorite part of the entire series. I really love that.
That's the World of Cardboard speech, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is just so cool. So
yeah, although the moment I'm thinking of is actually from beginning of season 2 called episode called Twilight, where a Brainiac attacks Apocalypse, and it ends up being a trap. But there's Superman and Darkseid duke it out at the end of that as well.
You know, I really wish they were still making that series.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I agree.
DC need a decent animated series.
Well, I mean, I like the occasional DC animated movie they're putting out now, but some of them I just don't even. I mean, they're doing a Flashpoint movie, for God's sakes.
Have done. It's out.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of event books I wasn't fond of, I mean, there were some cool issues in that. I like the idea of an Elseworlds where Aquaman's a militaristic emperor fighting, you know, Amazons, but just didn't. Yeah. I don't know.
That one's close to my choice for worst, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, sorry.
Which is not Flashpoint, but another time travel one is Armageddon 2001.
Oh God, I remember that one.
The annuals, yeah, yeah.
Boy, we have to. Well, it sounds like by bad we mean hopelessly obscure.
No, that was a big deal.
Deservedly so.
I heard there was a rumor that they changed who Monarch was at the last minute in that.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Supposedly the story, yes.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Captain Atom, but everybody guessed it very quickly.
But it leaked. Yep.
Yeah.
So they made it into Hawk, if I remember right.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
They did indeed.
Which made no sense at all.
Which made no sense at all.
And then did Captain Atom also become Monarch later on at some point as well? Because it was kind of fulfill that prophecy. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and ironically, you know, Monarch, you know, probably has almost as twisted and convoluted a continuity as, you know, characters like Hawkman. Because, you know, exactly who he was ever intended to be and who he ended up being and which books he's appeared in and in what capacity and even for that matter, what it is he can actually do.
Hawkman flies, man.
Has never been really made clear.
Well, you know, I'll just throw out, this is an event book. I don't think it was great, but I really enjoyed it because I used to be a huge Green Lantern fan. And Final Night, back in, I want to say, 96.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it basically a Hal Jordan redemption story.
Yeah.
But you know, if they hadn't have bowed to pressure from Heat, which it really really scares me that so much of DC's policies could be dictated by 10 middle-aged angry guys on the internet, and they hadn't done that really really god awful Spectre series, that would actually be better remembered and more poignant, you know, giving Hal that exit. Because clearly at the time, DC, rightly or wrongly, wanted to be shed of Hal. And I thought that was as great a way to send him off as possible.
But didn't they want to be rid of everybody then? Weren't we gaining more focus on Wally West? And like, it was literally like all the old guard were like becoming hey, we're updating the rule again. Don't worry about one thing. Worry about Donna Troy instead and all this.
It's kind of odd how that was happening then, and now it's like, where's Wally West? And you still got Rainer Erfurt's not long.
Well, it's the waves of nostalgia. I mean, you know, Hal and Barry are back pretty much solely because they're the characters that Geoff Johns grew up on. You know, I mean, because frankly, you know, neither Hal Jordan nor Barry Allen are at all interesting.
But we didn't lose a Lantern, though. When they brought him back, that's the odd thing. When they did the reboot, we got Hal back as like a proper Lantern, but we didn't lose any of the others either. So that was quite strange.
Yeah.
Whereas with like Donna Troy, not a sign. Wally West, nowhere. You know?
Nope, they're just gone.
Apparently, they're coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was some story that Geoff Johns is doing a big. They're revamping the New 52. Geoff Johns is helming the ship, and they're bringing
even
back
newer 52.
Yeah,
5 years later, I think they're calling it.
Yeah, 5 years later.
Are they really revamping?
Oh, sweet gods, is it going to be 5 years later? That's
I don't know if it has it been 5 years. I don't think it's been 5 years, but
it's only been about three, I think.
The name of the event is 5 years later, and I'm kind of a closet Booster Gold fan, and they're bringing. He's going to have a series apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say, Dan Juergens' later Booster Gold series with all of the Rip Hunter time travel stuff.
That's
was actually kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't it. They've already announced this is going to be the grim and gritty Booster Gold.
Oh,
yeah.
Because that always makes things better.
Because nothing says grim and gritty like calling yourself Booster Gold.
I guess you just dashed my hopes, Chris, because what my hope was Booster Gold is theoretically one of two people, including Pandora, who knows what happened to the old DC Universe. Because he was outside the time stream and he knew what was happening, and I was hoping that maybe Booster Gold would be a window into getting some of these characters back and maybe, you know.
I don't think he remembers. I think on the issue where, like, after Flashpoint, where, like, the final issue of his series, he kind of got there and kind of just went, oh, and shrugged his shoulders and carried on flying around as normal. I don't think oh my God, something big's happened.
So is Booster, like, the psycho pirate of New 52 now?
Probably. Pirate of New 52, yeah.
But someone also
said that Pandora is not necessarily the same Pandora we see in Flashpoint. It could just be a character that's the same name and like appearance, but not necessarily the one that actually put the universes together. But I don't read Pandora, so I can say it.
Yeah, you're reminding me of why I'm just reading Batman 66. A little bit.
Exactly. I was going to say you guys are making me grateful for not reading any of New 52.
I read way too much New 52. So, you know.
So, well, hey, guys, we've had a good conversation. I got to actually get back to work because we do a daytime podcast now because I have a kid. But anything else we want to throw in there before we call it a podcast?
It was real great to talk to all of you guys again. Thank you so much for allowing me to come.
Yeah, a pleasure.
Yeah.
I was nice having you guys. Chris, any closing thoughts?
Thank you for having me on, and thanks, everybody, for listening. And always great talking to you, gentlemen.
I was hoping you were going to close out with something enraged and hysterical, Chris. But that's
he's playing against type.
At Flashpoint. What else is there to add? You know,
that's true.
I think that Steve's comment that Barry Allen was uninteresting has stunned Chris into silence.
No, he's totally right. In fact, the only thing worse than boring old 60s Barry Allen is the new Barry Allen who has this really kind of cheap Batman knockoff motivation. But it doesn't change the fact that's still one of my favorite New 52 books just because
every other character but Barry Allen is interesting.
Yes, yes. So this is the reasons I always read The Flash, except for the really, truly great Mark Waid Wally West run, where Wally actually
was tuning
in. See, that's how I met The Flash. I know you're getting ready to go, Mike, but I didn't even read DC Comics until after Crisis. Like I rediscovered
your Flash is Wally West.
Exactly. I discovered DC Comics with Dark Knight Returns. And all those characters got reinvented after the Crisis, and so I loved Mark that Flash. That Wally West was my Flash. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I would agree, actually. I was a Marvel kid before Dark Knight Returns. And then I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I'll check it out. And then, Barry Allen was always ancient history to me.
Yeah.
So I had a college professor. Oh, God, I forget his name now. A minor comic book writer. And he actually found some of the DC editors at a convention. He was like, why'd you do this to my characters? I love these characters. And they're like, well, you can still read the books if you want. They're still, you know, we didn't go burn your long boxes or anything. And he was so pissed off that they, you know, kind of brushed him aside like that. But and I was listening to a story in his office one day, and I was like, yeah, that's really terrible. On the other hand, Wally West is kind of cool. Maybe you should check out these new guys. I don't know. But
yeah. You know, funny story, at the Baltimore Comic Con this year, Dan Didio came into me and said the exact same thing, and I didn't say anything to begin with. He just walked up and started saying that. Weirdest thing.
It's like he knew.
Yeah.
If he'd bought you a cheeseburger first.
There you go. There you go. I'd been totally there. Second weirdest thing that happened to me at Baltimore Comic Con there that year.
What was the first thing?
Okay, the first one actually happened. I was in line to get Mark Waid's autograph, and there were two guys in line behind me with really good Captain Cold and Mirror Master costumes.
Great.
And I was chatting with them. They're like, oh, that's great. You even did the guns and everything. And I was in my usual, I had like my khaki shorts, my flip-flops, and my Hawaiian shirt. And a guy comes by with a camera and sees us chatting, and he goes, oh, are the three of you together? and I couldn't think, is he sort of half remembering there's a Flash villain who's like a fat middle-aged guy in a Hawaiian shirt? Or was he sitting there thinking, wow, Weather Wizard has really let himself go?
I think he thought you were George Perez.
On that happy note, thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll catch you next time.
Steal us out, yes.
Yeah. Catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.